In the grim darkness of the 41st millennium, we are locked in a tumultuous state of eternal war. And our very survival can only be assured by the continued sacrifice of the nameless heroes and martyrs of the Imperium. With all of the horrors of the galaxy, however, there is still one species which is certainly thriving during these most trying of times, and this could only ever be the Orcs. Being a faction which blossoms and blooms from any form of war, it is no wonder that within an Orc society that the strongest and meanest of their kind will rise to the top as the lording war boss. For the rest of their tribe, the weaker and more cowardly of greenskins will be relegated to a life of subservience, but so long as there is a war to engage in, then their lives will still be utterly fulfilled. To an Orc, bigger is always better, and they will forever see this as an innate truth to life. They will be completely satisfied with following the biggest boss around, since if he is the largest and greenest Orc in town, then why should they not follow him? Once a boss has proven himself to be the baddest and most appropriate leader of his kin, then a tribe will quickly form with a rather predictable structure. All across the galaxy, Orc groups will be organized in a similar way, where the war boss will hold authority over his small confederation of boys, who each follow in his every order and directive. With that being said, if the lesser Orcs start to become rather rowdy, then the boss may see fit to crump a few heads, all to keep his swarming rabble of boys in check. Tribes can vary wildly in number, ranging from just a few dozen boys clamoring around a humble squig roast to groups containing countless millions of rabid and bloodthirsty warriors. The total count of greenskins within a tribe is simply dependent upon the influence of the ruling war boss. If he is able to exude an aura of strength and effectively lead his boys into a large-scale conflict, then he will surely be successful in his reign as boss. Now, with that in mind, you must note that when an Orc tribe starts to tally up their victorious raids and battles, then more and more greenskins will begin to flock to their cause, all so that they can get stuck in with the fun. As something akin to a green snowball, a tribe can swell to such an immense size that it may end up being a threat to entire star systems. It may be difficult to imagine a single war boss as being capable enough to rule over such a vast number of Orcs, but if the boss is proficient and powerful enough, then he will be able to wrangle control over the disorderly mob to great effect. In truth, however, at a large enough scale, he should not be referred to as a war boss anymore, and the boys will instead name him as a mighty warlord. He will then begin to delegate control of certain aspects of the tribe to the smaller and runtier war bosses, who will lead their lesser war bands into battle at the will of the overarching warlord. An incredibly important aspect of greenskin society is that in addition to belonging to a tribe, that the groups will also belong to what is known as an Orc clan. These are constant and ever-enduring cultural groups to the Orcs, which each signify and embody a specific aspect of the Orky philosophy. Each clan will be notably distinct from one another, with the boys from each one displaying unique war paints, markings, glyphs, battle tactics, and even preferences to their living conditions. With all this in mind, we shall now proceed to investigate the six clans which we have thus far encountered within our galaxy. These would be the mighty Goths, the rocketing evil Suns, the haughty bad Moons, the rugged snake bites, the dastardly blood axes, and the sneaky death skulls. Naturally, the first clan we discuss has to be the largest and meanest one, and so without further delay, let us learn of the terrible Goths. Out of all the clans, the title of most brutish, most violent, and most classically Orky could only ever belong to the Goths. These boys would do anything to start a fight, most often being found squabbling amongst themselves if no other good opponent can be found. And even by orc standards, they are known to be the most war-driven out of all of their kin. The Goths are extremely proficient in hand-to-hand combat, preferring to rush forth and get stuck in with an enemy rather than dilly about with time-wasting tactics or strategies. They are particularly thrilled by the sheer thunderous cacophony of war, taking great pleasure in the sounds of crashing blades, the wet, dull hisses of severed limbs, and the awe-inspiring explosions which will surely stain any battlefield they find themselves on. With their keen interest in destruction, it is of no wonder that the Goths are notorious for their widespread use of stick bombs. These are small, rudimentary explosives which have been haphazardly bolted onto a large wooden handle, resulting in a bomb which can be lobbed into enemy lines by the dastardly boy. If, however, he is feeling slightly more reckless, then he can simply smack the stick bomb against an opponent's head, which will almost assuredly result in the death of the foe, and sometimes even the boy himself. Due to their interest, it is incredibly common to see members of the Goth clan marching into battle with a hefty stash of explosives strapped to their backs, which they will be sure to fully utilize during a coming battle. As previously stated, the Goths are the most well-populated clan, and their wars often comprise of a true green tide with countless hordes of orcs trudging themselves across a battlefield to reach their unfortunate enemies. The ground will surely shake and tremble under the thumps of a million boys, each striding with their black steel-capped boots and screaming their war chants for all to hear. In some ways, the Goths may be seen as the purest of all orcs, as they try to embody the essence of what it means to be an orc above all else. They will dress themselves and paint their armor to be starkly black, since they see the gaudy and flashy colors of the other clans as being demeaning towards the orcs. Similarly, they will eschew the application of tattoos and war paints, since they simply cannot understand why any sane orc would want to cover up his mighty green skin. The only patterning which the Goths have been known to use would be a clean black and white checkering painted onto parts of their armor and of their vehicles. This design, however, is the extent of flashiness which these orcs will afford themselves with. All clans are known to display a symbol, and the puritanical Goths are no exception. Their icon would be that of a mighty bull's head, topped with two great horns. The orcs find great pride and kinship with this noble beast, since they see it as an incredibly pure expression of anger, violence, and bad-tempered rage. Many will also be swelled with some semblance of quiet honor, from being associated with one of the few beasts which is known to produce a flatulence, which is just as foul as their own. The next clan to classify would be that of the Evil Sons. These are the orcs who have dedicated themselves to the cult of speed. All that they care about and all they desire is to simply go faster, and they will do anything they can to attain this maximum state of speed. Their motto is quite simple, and for an orc it is rather hard to find fault in, and it is that reddens go faster. This brings up an interesting point regarding orc psychology. For the orcs, their utter belief and dedication towards an idea goes beyond normal comprehension, and they seem to be able to manifest certain beliefs into reality just by believing that it is true. The prime example of this phenomena would be that the orcs believe that when something is red, then it will surely be faster than if it was not. Capitalizing on this, the Evil Sons will paint near everything possible red, just to make sure that it can be as speedy as possible. Their trucks, bikes, and jets will be coated in thick scarlet paint, which will surely allow them to reach new top speeds. The boys themselves will also go into battle, wearing red clothes and armor, whilst their faces will be adorned with crimson war paints. This belief in the power of color is held so strongly by the orcs that they will even paint their bullets red, purely in the hope that it makes them shoot faster. The only snag in this scarlet ideation is that red paint is rather difficult for the orcs to obtain, and so it is not uncommon for them to only paint a select few key items red for each boy. Nevertheless, they will prioritize the painting of their vehicles red, since even with the limited IQ of an orc, they understand that a turbocharged bike will surely be faster than even a fully painted boy. Now, the orcs may be widely considered as being quite stupid, but they are nothing if not resourceful. In order to circumvent the limited access of red paint, they will readily utilize the blood of their enemies as an acceptable alternative. To an orc, red is red, and its source truly does not matter so long as the color is correct. Regardless of where they have obtained their scarlet pigment from, an evil sun's horde will be seen as a mighty red tide racing across a battlefield to bring their own speedy application of death to their enemies. Being addicted to going as fast as possible, it is no wonder that the members of this clan will eternally aspire towards owning the fastest vehicle possible. Their tribal grounds will be utterly littered with war bikes, buggies, trucks, and battle wagons, all of which will have been highly customized to increase their potential top speeds. Now, the boys themselves are not particularly proficient in mechanical work, but this is where the mechs take center stage. A tribe which follows the cult of speed will often be accompanied by hordes of the technologically savvy mechs who will happily enhance the wheels, engines, and exhausts solely to make the vehicle into a point of pride to the speed enthusiasts. An important point to remember is that the mechanical majesty of the mechs truly knows no bounds. They have been known to produce vehicles which are simply a rocket which has had four wheels and a seat haphazardly bolted on. Now, this may seem to be rather dangerous, but where there is a will, there is a way. And so the speed freaks will try their best to drive such a terrible and insane contraption. The evil sons are almost always on the move. Even their workshops are built to be as mobile as possible, so the tribes will travel across a world, always looking for new victims to kill and new settlements to plunder. It is incredibly frustrating for an enemy to face off against an evil sun's warband in battle. With their entirely mechanized force, the orcs can rapidly outmaneuver and reposition themselves to flank and isolate enemy units before rushing in to kill and loot everything they find. Naturally, their clan symbol is of a blood-red orc's face, surrounded by the sparking energies of a distant and mighty sun. They will adorn this symbol on as many pieces of war gear as possible, with the orcs believing that it further enhances their speedy capabilities if it is displayed. They see the totem as a representation of a blood-red sun, glowing so hot that it emboldens and inspires all who follow it. From what Imperial xenologists have uncovered, it appears that the ancient and more superstitious of tribal orcs used to believe that a dying sun could be reawakened by an offering of blood, and so the groups would regularly give up blood sacrifices to the sun of their home world, all in the hopes that it may keep it alive. The third clan, who are surely the haughtiest and most braggadocious of all, would be the Bad Moons. Out of all the orcs, this group is without a doubt the richest and most teeth-oriented of all. For a seemingly unknown reason, the orcs of the Bad Moons find that their teeth tend to grow larger and faster than any other clan, which provides them with a constant supply of wealth with which to fund their lofty endeavors. Now, some orcs may feel jealous at this, but if it bothers them enough, then they can simply smash a Bad Moon in the mouth and steal all his teeth for himself. These orcs, with their healthy source of liquidity, have a reputation for showing off their wealth, and they will flaunt it wherever possible. Their vehicles are adorned with dozens, or even hundreds of trinkets, glyphs, trophies, and prizes. Even the lowliest of boy will deck himself out with gold earrings and fancy armor, just to prove that he too is a force of financial reckoning. This is nothing compared to how the war bosses of the Bad Moons show their wealth. They will be a walking manifestation of abundance and affluence, often wearing fully gold-plated armor, which has been enhanced with personal symbols of fortune and luxury. In addition, they will commission customized weaponry, which can spit out enough firepower and heavy ordnance to annihilate entire platoons of enemy forces with but a single pull of its trigger. Many of the more ostentatious of orcs will also aspire towards having a jaw full of shiny gold teeth, all of which will need to be painstakingly fitted by a well-paid mad doc. The problem with these implants, however, is that the orc will continue to grow new teeth, which will eventually push out the gold set, making the entire procedure rather a waste of time. Some of the slightly smarter Bad Moons, who have already realized the folly in replacing their own teeth, will simply wear the gold set as a necklace, allowing them to still display and flaunt their affluence to all who look upon them. Because of the sheer wealth of these orcs, they built their settlements to be rather posh and refined, at least by orc standards. It is incredibly common to find extravagant living quarters maintained by hordes of Gretchen who will cook up vast feasts for the slightly portly and well-fed boys. The throne of a war boss will also be constructed to be an absolutely awe-inspiring sight. Huge jutting sculptures of teeth will cover its surface, and hundreds of lowly grots will be on duty to fan and tend to the boss's every desire. These orcs have been seen to indulge in some rather un-orky activities, all for their own financial gain. They have attempted to strike trade deals with alien species just to obtain rare and esoteric technologies, which they will almost always give to a mech for him to adapt into some new weapon of terrible destruction. In battle, the Bad Moons favor tactics which will prolong their affluent existence, so they will often be found far from the front lines, away from any foes who may rob them of their well-off life. They tend to favor ranged weapons over anything else, and so their war bands will almost always contain flashgits and looters, who rain down streams of lead and explosives into enemy lines, utterly decimating any who face off against them. Their clan emblem is a large, snarling yellow moon wreathed by a field of green flames. If one is to see an approaching warband with this icon, then they should fear not only for their lives, but also for their personal belongings. For you see, the Bad Moons almost assuredly care more for stealing your valuables over your own worthless life. Next would be the rugged and rather technologically castrated clan, known as the Snakebites. Most other orcs would view them as being somewhat backwards and rather simple, since they mainly adhere to the old and outdated tribal beliefs. Rather than adopting more modern orky technologies, such as engines or wheels, they will instead prefer to use squigs and naturally sourced resources for most of their needs. Their tribal grounds are almost always quite barren, being made up of simple tents, huts, and cages, with more advanced structures such as workshops or dock quarters being completely absent. Nevertheless, some of the duties of a mad doc will instead be performed by a crazed shaman who will administer a wide range of poisons and tonics to cure even the most life-threatening of maladies. Because of their rough lifestyle, the snake bites usually appear rather weather-beaten and grimy, even by orc standards. But this has benefited them in becoming as tough as an old Grox boot, and they simply don't require the same lofty standards as a bad moon to get their job done. As stated, these orcs utilize squigs to great effect, and they are used in every aspect of snakebite life. They have become experts at breeding these creatures to produce several subspecies, all of whom display specific traits to best benefit the orcs. Some will grow to be incredibly fat and tasty, making them excellent for consumption, whilst others are bred to be violent near feral beasts, and these are to be unleashed onto a battlefield, where they will rabidly tear apart any unfortunate foes who encounter them. The name snakebite comes from an ancient tribal tradition in which a young orc is to trap a venomous snake before allowing it to bite him. And only the boys who can suck out the venom and survive are allowed to stand as fully fledged members of the tribe. Because of this tradition, they have become incredibly resilient to poisons, and it is not uncommon for the snake bites to keep a myriad of toxic creatures as pets, which they often use to poison their blades on the eve of battle. If the snake bites move to a new planet during a war, then they will bring several of the most toxic species with them, just to introduce them into the native wildlife, ensuring that they always have a steady supply of poisons and toxins on hand. In addition to breeding squigs, the runt herders will keep vast swarms of gretchen in small pens, who have the unenviable duty of cleaning up the huge piles of festering squig dung, which will inevitably begin to fill the camp. During a battle, the gretchen are utilized as weapons themselves, being given small knives to stab at an enemy's shins, and some of the luckiest are allowed to man small gun batteries, far from the front lines of battle. Their clan emblem is based around the previously mentioned tradition of receiving a snake bite, and it displays a green coiled serpent bearing its venomous fangs for all to see. Due to their reverence towards this tradition and symbol, many of the craftier snakebite members will cobble together small memorabilia in the appearance of a reptile. Thus, it is not uncommon to encounter these tribal boys wearing small rusted earrings fashioned in the image of a snake. In addition, their war gear is most often sourced from the animals and creatures of a planet. The lesser boys will go into battle wearing tattered squig hide clothes, whereas the richer bosses will adorn themselves in glorious wolfskin pelts. They are commonly decorated with fabled hair squigs, which they will style into topknots or mohawks, often attempting to mimic the traits of dangerous animal species which they have encountered. The fifth clan would be the most distrustworthy of all orcs, and these would be the Blood Axes. No orc truly wishes to work with these strange gits, as they are often found to do such untasteful things such as working with humans, or even retreating from a battle. They are viewed as nothing but treacherous, squig-waste-eating scumbags, who certainly do not embody the orky lifestyle. But this is perhaps somewhat of an undeserved reputation. Yes, they have been known to work with imperial forces at times, but this is universally done to procure and obtain human weapons, which they almost always turn against their human allies as soon as the right opportunity presents itself. Also, the act of retreating is not done out of cowardice and is instead done to give themselves a better chance of crumping their enemies if the situation seems untenable to them. Instead of simply fleeing, most Blood Axes will attempt to use camouflage to simply avoid being seen, allowing them to position themselves in the best possible location to ambush and rip apart the unsuspecting enemy. They have even been known to use decoy units to draw out enemy forces, before flanking and falling upon those who would never suspect an orc of being capable of executing such a strategic ploy. These tactics are incredibly frowned upon by most other clans, but the Blood Axes simply don't care for the opinions of others. The Blood Axe war bosses will plan out their wars with an uncharacteristic emphasis on strategy and tactical cunning, to such an extent that it would surely make even the orc god Mork proud. Their totem is of a pair of crossed, blood-splattered axes, placed atop a dark green circle with an orky effigy adorning the center. Flashy symbols such as this are not often worn by the Blood Axes, as they instead prefer to display military trophies of the Imperium upon their armor. There is a deep reverence of imperial medals and badges, which they wear as a mark of honor, since they believe the medal will confer some semblance of protection upon the wearer. The final clan to discuss is similarly distrusted by other orcs, and it would be the Death Skulls. They have gained a fierce reputation as being the lootiest of all orcs, who seem to do nothing if it does not enable them to better scavenge, steal, and scrounge from whoever they encounter. There is an old saying amongst the orcs that if one is to lend anything to a Death Skull, then they may as well toss it into the sun, for you're far more likely to have the sun return it to you than the unscrumptious Death Skull. They seem to only care about the act of stealing, rather than seeking out the object which they stole. A Death Skull would happily steal the Golden Throne itself if he could, but once he had it, then he'd probably forget about it a day later, choosing to seek out new items and trophies to plunder, rather than enjoying that which he took. For a Death Skull, if they are to go to war, then they see this as a two-stage process. The first would obviously be the battle itself, but it is overshadowed by the far more important work of looting and scavenging the battlefield. All of their tactics are simply designed to speed up the process of battle, as they would far rather spend the majority of their time plundering the fallen troops for shiny tools and precious valuables. What they have stolen and looted will be traded away to other orcs, who will almost always find themselves on the bad end of a deal. But the Death Skull will be long gone by the time the ignorant boy realizes that he has been scammed. Once back at a camp, the Death Skulls will inevitably fall into a mass of bickering, argumentative boys, all of whom think they deserve the loot of the next orc. And this will continue until they find a new war to fight in, and thus the Death Skull cycle starts anew. They bear the totem of a blue-horned skull, which they will often build out of the bones of fallen enemies. This sigil will be inscribed and attached to anything which the boys own, as a sign that it belongs to them and no one else. Their equipment is often looted from other orcs or even other species, so it is not unheard of to see a Death Skull wearing parts of an Astartes armor if he so desires to wear it. Now, these orcs are some of the most superstitious of all the other clans. They believe the color blue to be lucky in that it protects them from damage and harm. Thus, they will slather everything in blue paint, all to keep their lives, and more importantly, their possessions safe from fate's evil eye. Many would claim that this belief does actually hold some merit, since the Death Skulls appear to be the luckiest of all clans. Nevertheless, this claim could never be truly proven, and so Imperial scholars have written it off as crazed Xenos superstition. This concludes our study into the primary orc clans of the galaxy. Some believe that the distinctions between the clans was due to the various genetic augmentations made to the orcs by the ancient brain boys. The theory reads that this was done to instill some semblance of societal order to the green skins. But even if this was true, the plan has clearly failed, since the only thing the orcs seem to care about now is fighting and winning. Nevertheless, when a large enough wah comes together, it will surely be made up of the members of several clans who will each follow in the war path of the overarching warlord. No matter the clan, every single orc will be driven towards attaining the same goal, and that would be to carve their terrible green path throughout the stars.